You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98, because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location. At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Everybody is asking this question. If you're following the Adelson case, is Wendy next? She's obviously not been charged with anything. She maintains her innocence. And yeah, that's where things are at right now. But could things change now that Donna's adjusting to prison? Charlie's toe is hopefully healing up better after being nicked by the door. What's going to happen here? Anything? I don't know. For nearly a decade, the story of the Markell murder has hung over Tallahassee like a ghost. It refuses to leave the broom. Every few years, another piece of the puzzle drops, another Adelson brought down, another courtroom revelation that drags the twisted family saga further into the light. Donna Adelson now serving that life in prison for masterminding the murder of her former son-in-law, her former husband, father of her kids, Florida State University law professor Dan Markell. Her son, Charlie Adelson, sits in his own cell after his conviction last year for the same crime. The hitmen who pulled the trigger are behind bars. The middlewoman who arranged it, Catherine McBona, is serving her time as well. And then there's Wendy, the ex-wife, the mother of Dan Markell's kids. The spark that ignited the entire custody war, the prosecutors say, became the motive for murder. A woman who, after everyone around her fell, still walks free? Yeah. To some, that freedom feels like justice gone unfinished. To others, it's proof that prosecutors are doing exactly what they should, moving only on what they can prove, not what they suspect. And that's how our justice system works. A suspicion, in this case, is a powerful thing. Wendy has denied any involvement in the plot to kill her ex-husband. She has testified under oath countless times. She's cooperated when called, but the narrative orbit around her never stops spinning. The question that lingers now, louder than ever, after her mother's conviction is simple. What would it actually take to charge Wendy? It's not as easy as most people think, and we're going to walk through this. And I get it. There's anger, especially after hearing the Markells on Dateline the other night talking about them wanting to see their grandchildren offering like an all expense paid trip. Come to Canada. Come, let's go around here. I want to show the grandkids. I want to show Dan's kids what it was like where he grew up. What was life like for their own father? And he alleges that Wendy said that will never happen. Again, that doesn't make you a killer. It can make you a really heartless individual if that's true. I mean, like beyond imagination. But again, not something you arrest somebody for the rest of their life and put them away on. So, what would it take? Well, to indict someone in a murder-for-hire conspiracy, prosecutors need more than family tension or ugly text messages. They need evidence that's active, deliberate, and admissible. Something that shows Wendy wasn't just venting to her mother about her frustrations with Markel, but that she knew a plan existed, that she contributed to it, or that she benefited from it in ways that tie her directly to the crime. Right now, there's no public proof of that. Not yet. I mean, one could argue, did it benefit her that she got to move down to Vietnam? Yeah. Again, they don't seem to have the piece there. If they do, they're holding on to it, waiting for the right time. But the landscape could shift, and quickly, if three things ever happen. The first is the discovery of direct communication, a digital breadcrumb trail, texts, emails, WhatsApp messages, call logs, anything that puts Wendy in the loop before the murder, not after. In the Donna Adelson trial, prosecutors introduced messages where Donna told her daughter, it's time for action. You need to put on the performance of your life. The defense argued it was about the custody battle, not a murder plot. And that argument held because without context, those words sit in a gray zone. But if investigators were ever to uncover deleted messages, say, unrecover them from a backup or a cloud account that explicitly tied Wendy to conversations about eliminating her ex-husband, that would blow the case wide open. Those records could become the bridge between motive and conspiracy if they exist. And make no mistake, law enforcement hasn't stopped looking. The FDLE has subpoenaed data, reanalyzed devices, and is known to be tracing every digital link that survived from 2014. The problem isn't willpower, it's survivability. Technology decays, server purges. And after 11 years, digital trails are as fragile as cobwebs. And we didn't keep the same trails that we do today. Back then, our devices just didn't. Some parts did, some parts didn't. Very different world today. Still, if one of those cobwebs leads to proof of coordination, well, that's enough to start a new grand jury. The second path to a potential charge lies in the money, because in the end, murder for hire always has a receipt. The prosecution's case against Charlie Adelson was built largely on financial patterns and withdrawals, payments, coded transfers through shell accounts, the payments to Catherine McBonough, who funneled money to the hitman. And if Wendy ever touched any of those funds directly or indirectly, she'd be in deep trouble. It doesn't have to be her handing over the cash. It could be a reimbursement, a transfer from one family trust to another, even a wire disguised as a loan that prosecutors can show was compensation for the murder. Again, no evidence that that exists. Just saying, if it did, and there's reason to believe investigators have reopened that angle, though. The Adelson family's financials are intertwined across properties, dental businesses, and trusts. Money has a way of revealing the truth when people can't, because if it doesn't, because it just doesn't lie, and it doesn't forget. So they're looking. If the money ever shows she participated, even passively, again, it becomes conspiracy. Again, big if. They've been looking at this family for quite some time now. The third and most explosive potential trigger is cooperation. Someone flipping. It could come from anywhere, but the most likely source now is Donna Adelson herself. She's in her 70s. She's never leaving prison alive. The only thing she controls anymore is the story she leaves behind. And in prison, control is currency. It's leverage. If Donna ever decides to talk, to strike a deal, to ease her conscience, or to simply burn the rest of the house down, her testimony, it could change everything. If she were to tell prosecutors that Wendy was involved, like her attorney has been hinting at the whole time her trial was going on, make no mistake, they are not afraid to throw Wendy under the bus. They've attempted to several times. If it's backed up by hard proof, corroborating texts, phone records, money movements, Wendy would be indicted within months. It would take one grand jury session. The infrastructure is already there. The narrative is mapped. The state doesn't need to build a new case from scratch. They just need one more verified node to connect Wendy to the conspiracy triangle. But as of today, that node doesn't exist publicly, and that's why she remains uncharged. And again, this all does look horrible. This family is horrible. Some have escaped. One son out of New York, he got out. Was Wendy standing close to the fire but not participating in roasting any of the marshmallows? I don't know. Did she know they were going to roast marshmallows? I guess is more of the question. From a psychological standpoint, Wendy's position is fascinating and precarious. She's testified under immunity, and that gives her partial protection. Nothing she said in her mother's trial can be used against her directly, but that immunity is not absolute. It doesn't cover new evidence, new statements, or independent corroboration that sits outside of that testimony. In other words, if fresh proof emerges, she's vulnerable. And let's not ignore what that means emotionally. Wendy testified against her own mother, a woman now serving life because of the same case that destroyed her marriage and her children's family. Whatever else she is, that's a psychological nightmare. She's watching the fallout of a conspiracy she's linked to by blood, if not by evidence. She can't escape the name Adelson. She can't escape the Markell legacy. Every time another verdict lands, her name trends. Every time a prosecutor makes a statement, she's the invisible subject. And it's worth asking, how does someone live like that? How do you move through the world knowing that any day your phone could buzz and it's not a friend texting you, but a state attorney saying, "We need to talk"? That's its own kind of prison. Legally speaking, Wendy's position is what's called unindicted co-conspirator territory. It's limbo. You're part of the narrative, but not the docket. The jury of public opinion already thinks you're guilty, but the legal system hasn't caught up or can't. Prosecutors walk a fine line in those situations. If they move too soon, they risk losing the entire case on insufficient evidence. If they wait too long, the statute of limitations on ancillary charges, conspiracy, obstruction, even accessory after the fact can start to run out. That's why after Donna's sentencing, the state was careful. They didn't celebrate. They didn't declare victory. They said the investigation remains open. That's prosecutor speak for, "We're still looking at you, Wendy." And for now, there's nothing in the public to suggest an imminent arrest. But the reality of criminal cases is that silence doesn't mean inactivity. Grand juries operate in secret. Evidence doesn't leak until it's ready. And if this case has taught us anything, it's that the walls close slowly. They do. They close a lot more slowly in this case than all at once. Remember, it took 8 years from the day of the murder for Charlie Adelson to face trial. For years, he lived comfortably, running a dental practice, smiling on social media, acting like life had gone back to normal. Then one recording surfaced, the infamous bump tape, and suddenly he was in cuffs. Wendy knows that pattern better than anyone. She watched it happen to her brother. Or maybe she doesn't remember. I don't recall. One day he was free, the next he was a headline. That's the danger of living at the edge of a conspiracy. You never know which conversation, which call, which overlooked text will become the thread that unravels your whole life. And it's not lost on anyone that Wendy herself may be holding the final key. Because every person charged so far, from the gunman to the mother to the brother, had someone else to point to. Wendy's the only one left without a scapegoat. If she's innocent, the world may never believe it. If she's guilty, the truth may never be proven. Either way, she's trapped in a narrative she can't escape. One built by her family, fueled by ambition, and cemented by murder. That's the kind of story that doesn't end in a courtroom, it ends in psychology. When you listen to Wendy's own words, both in interviews and on the stand, there's a striking duality. She talks about wanting peace, moving on, protecting her children, yet her tone carries the same defensive deflection that's echoed through every Adelson testimony. There's always someone else to blame, always another context. But no amount of distance can erase the timeline. Markel's murder cleared the path for Wendy to relocate. Within weeks, she was gone, South Florida, mission accomplished. That sequence doesn't prove anything criminal, but it's a pattern that keeps prosecutors from closing the book. Because if the motive was a relocation and the relocation happened, the question remains, was that coincidence or consequence? That's why this case still matters. It's not about vengeance. It's about closure for the Markel family, for the justice system, for the two boys who have to grow up carrying both names, Markel and Adelson, although we all know how much they already tried to wipe away the Markel part, those Adelsons, them. Wendy's fate may never be sealed in a courtroom, but she'll live the rest of her life shadowed by the case that defined her family. And maybe for a woman who once claimed she felt trapped by her ex-husband, that's the final irony. She is still trapped. Only now it's by the silence of a secret she can't undo, and by a justice system that might still be waiting for one more reason to knock on her door. If that knock comes, until that knock comes or doesn't, she remains exactly what she's been for the last 11 years, the Adelson who got away. Tell me your thoughts in the comments section. Do you think she kept her distance enough? She may have. There are certainly people whose families are verbose enough, selfish enough, self-serving enough, and ignorant enough to think that we're going to go take care of this for her. I mean, you got to look. They already did treat her like a child. They treated all their children like children, which is probably why they acted like children as adults. It's not out of the realm of insanity or conspiracy or possibility, I think is the word. It's not out of the realm of possibility that the rest of the cluster Adelsons did this on their own. Now, Wendy's got some weird actions in this story, without a doubt. But she also has some that do seem to add up to being utterly sick over the situation that her family put her in, if we're to believe that she had nothing to do with this. I don't know. Your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. Search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. That's where you will find us. And press subscribe while you're there. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now. And don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Extra Value Meals are back. That means 10 tender juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.